This podcast is hosted by Chris Finkston and Spencer Oliver. They are both experienced paramedics. They've done everything from 911 ground ambulance to volunteer fire department work and are both currently flight paramedics. This podcast reviews scenarios based on real calls run by real out-of-hospital clinicians. Details are changed to protect the privacy of those involved and to present educational opportunities to the listener. This podcast is EMS 2020.
Welcome to another episode of EMS 2020.
That was a blaze of illness for like a month and a half. So
right. Yeah. And then we just delayed recording until we were both sick. We're like, well, we're out of time. So we got to record it now. Yeah. Now that was that was exciting. But yeah, everyone, welcome to another episode of EMS 2020. This is a show where we review pre-hospital calls that you guys actually send us from the field. And we see if we can learn something from them. Sometimes we think there's things that we can do better. Usually it's just us thinking you could have done better. But, you know, it's...
not always.
I'm kidding. But anyway, yeah, it's you're right. Not always. But to be honest, it's why you guys send it to us.
Yeah. And also, sometimes we learn things after the fact in which you guys go, hey, dumbasses.
Right. It's not where the tube goes.
You forgot this. Yeah.
And then endotracheal tubes go in the trachea.
Right.
I'm like,
yeah. So, yeah.
Well, and it is funny because like I won't say no one does this, but it's pretty rare that we get an episode where usually the episodes we get is like someone's like, hey, this was a weird call or something went wrong. What do you guys think? Very seldom, though I will say not never, do we get episodes sent to us being like, hey, this was so great. I think you could learn something. Check it out. That's pretty ballsy for one, but two, just remember like our professional job now, and I can say professional because we're paid now. Is to literally like, find things wrong with calls. So, I feel like we almost try harder when you challenge us that there is nothing wrong with a call. I feel like we will, how about this? In I See Dead People, someone ran a call way better than Spencer and I ever could. And we still had a recommendation at the end of it.
It's there is no one who escapes unscathed, and that is true for us hosts, as I said, because you know what we miss, the community on Facebook and Instagram catch and fill us in and then correct us or make suggestions that are even better. In fact, like not all of them are medical related.
Right.
Yeah. Some of them are just brilliant. They're like, you missed the opportunity to use the title Low and Be Cold.
Oh my God. That is going to haunt us forever.
Yeah.
That is going to haunt us forever.
I still wake up in the middle of the night like, damn it.
Anyway, please follow us on social media. Each and every episode, this one included, will get its own post on our social media, which is EMS20/20 on Facebook and EMS2020 Show on Instagram. And if you want your call to be on EMS2020, don't send us an email anymore. EMS2020podcast@gmail.com. It is still up. So for whatever reason, this doesn't work for you, we'll allow a transitional phase. But please, we now have a new submission form where all you have to do is fill out the prompts and we will get the call. It's going to help us really get to calls a lot better. You can find a link to that form on our social media, EMS20/20 on Facebook. And it'll be on there on EMS 2020 Show on Instagram. We also have a Beacons link in our bio. Check out the bio, and on the Beacons link, there will be the submission form. So there you go. Check out our social media. And if you want your call to be in the show, you use the form. Please use the form. Please use the form. Use the form. Please use the form. Use the form.
Use the from. Wait, damn it.
Also, we have a YouTube channel. It's the Rapid Sequence Information YouTube channel. See what I did there. RSI, that is us on YouTube. We had a recent episode where Spencer and I discussed which is better, fire department based EMS or private. And it's not what you would think. Actually, it may be what you think. If you're thinking the answer is it depends, then that is the answer. That's totally the answer. But it is a very interesting episode.
But maybe it's not. You'll have to watch and find out.
Yeah, there you go. Also, check out and learn about what happened in Rhode Island when 8 or 11 or 13, I think, by the time it ended. I don't know. A bunch of patients showed up with tubes in the wrong place, according to the receiving hospitals. And So yeah, check that episode out. That's one of our more popular episodes. And upcoming, Spencer and I are talking about, we have a discussion about what we feel is the impending doom, or at least what I feel is the impending doom from a financial standpoint of EMS. And then after that, we're going to have another one, which is my thoughts on the impending doom of the clinical side of EMS, which may or may not come true, but you know, it could. So those are coming up soon.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Also, so doom and gloom.
yeah, doom and gloom. So if you were thinking positive about EMS, let us take that away. I'm kidding, guys. There's actually still a lot to be positive about. It's a great career. But I do think we have some hurdles ahead that we need to be aware of, and because we have to jump them sooner or later. All right. Also, don't forget to check out GuardianCME.com. At GuardianCME.com, you can sign up and get registered for free continuing education. That's right, free. Not paywall free, not like tour free, and then you pay for more. Every single bit of continuing education on GuardianCME is 100% free, and that is awesome because the National Registry of Emergency Medical Technicians now allows you to get all of your continuing education online. You don't have to be in person for any of it anymore, and you can just get a ton of it done on Guardian CME. But not this episode. This episode will not be in Guardian CME, which is great for me because I don't have to edit two episodes. But maybe bad for you. But a lot of our other content is on Guardian CME, so please go check it out. So with that, let's do the thing.
Yeah, let's do the thing. Thank you for being a friend. Yeah.
Traveled all right. Down the road and back again. Don't you mean like, judging by the episode title that you have here, I'll be there for you. Isn't that the one we're doing?
Oh, yeah, that is. Well, you know what? I feel like they missed an opportunity.
Did they?
yeah. One clearly has friends already in it. And the other, well, I guess it doesn't have friends. It has friend. Thank you for being a friend.
Yeah.
And friends had multiple friends. So,
very true.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's fair. All right. Anyway, enough dancing on the fountain. Let's get to it. This week's call was sent to us by a member of the QAQI committee for a private ambulance agency.
Oh, nice.
Their agency reviewed a call in which, well, bad things happened. And they were curious what our take on it would be. So,
okay.
Yeah, here it is. Let's start with the crew. We have the medic, Rachel Green, a paramedic with less than a year's worth of experience with this service. They are working with an EMT who I've dubbed Ross Geller. They're an EMT with under 3 years experience at the service. We don't know prior experience before the service, but yeah. We do know, however, that they are not typical partners, but they have worked together previously.
Okay. Well, and that can create some challenges in general. At least they have some experience with each other. But I think we've all probably, I'm gonna guess that maybe those of us that are in some of the busier private ambulance companies, especially nowadays when staffing is hard for everybody, whether you're fire department, private ambulance, or hospital-based, working with people you've never met before isn't the most uncommon experience, and it can be tough sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they work for Friendly Ambulance Service, a private ambulance company for a metropolitan area. This is described as a large company. The crews are assigned to work 10 to 12 hour shifts, depending on the shift, and they utilize a dynamic deployment model in which they travel around from post to post, getting dispatched out to calls, never returning to base, except for end of shift.
Okay.
They have both medic shifts and EMT medic shifts. And again, yeah, this is described as a busy service. And the crews typically do anywhere from like 12 or 4 on the low end to 12 transports per shift, depending on the shift start times. Day shifts, for instance, tend to be
12 transports in a 12 hour shift. Ugh. I mean, it's not unheard of. I mean, I shouldn't ugh that too much, but it feels ugh just to, yeah.
Yeah, that's tiring. And you know it's not a 12-hour shift. That's where it just becomes that you're like, oh, this is my 14-hour day.
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah. Unless if you are in a densely packed urban area where you're never more than 5 minutes away from a hospital, I can see that happening.
Where
you're within 12 hours, but also what I don't see happening in that kind of area is a shift ever lasting 12 hours. So, you know, potato.
Yeah.
I think in that kind of area, you would just have a 17 transport day. I think that's the only thing that would happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right. Well, they work alongside Central Perk Fire Department. The call giver states that the fire department is an ALS service and that they overall have a fairly positive relationship with the service, but that isn't universal. Not all the ambulance service crew members feel that way at friendly ambulance service. Okay. So, yeah. For this call, there are two hospitals that factor in, a proximal to the scene ED with no specialty services, for instance, no cath lab, no ICU, etc., and their regional trauma center, which is about 25 minutes away from the scene.
Okay.
And I think that's all we need to know. Questions before we start?
Not really. I mean, unless they have a more specific description of the relationship with the fire department, but if they don't, not really. That's just kind of my general curiosity. Did you see how many trucks they run in a day?
I don't have that information.
Okay.
I neglected to ask. I was just like, oh, okay, busy with the 4 to 12, and I'm
gotcha.
But by large, I'd imagine greater than 30.
Oh, you know what? I don't have. I don't have my whiteboard.
Oh, get
Where
it.
Where is my whiteboard? All right, got my whiteboard.
Oh, you know what? You'll just have to do it medic style, right on your hand.
I don't have a glove.
I know you have a glove laying around.
I actually just have gloves on my hands at all time. That's why I never have to worry about BSI scene safe. Oh my goodness! Yeah, I just
There's a trick. You walk into your paramedic your testing station. You're just already wearing gloves.
Yeah, that's actually true because it does say. Either verbalizes or dons appropriate PPE. So,
yeah.
Of course, my understanding is that they're going to be getting rid of the practical anyway. So,
oh, man.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about
it. Times they are a changing.
Yeah, they are. All right. Anyway, moving on.
Okay. So it's about 10 p.m. in Central Perk City, and the 911 center dispatcher, Chandler Google, because Bing sucks. tells friendly ambulance unit 495 that they need to respond to stage for a possible assault victim at Central Perk Park.
Of course.
495 confirms that police are en route, and Chandler comes back with a, no, we're just going to wait to see who wins. Of course police are en route.
Nice.
I'm sure that happened. Central Perk Fire Department is en route as well. All right, a little backstory on this area. This is an area in the city where many of the houseless folks congregate. Gotcha. Police, fire, and ambulance crews respond here fairly regularly. So Ross and Rachel go en route, and we don't know what they thought or discussed, as that did not come up in the QA review, but we do know that they have an extended response time and are cleared to enter the scene prior to arriving. They arrive about 5 minutes after Central Perk Fire Department put themselves on scene.
Okay.
All right, so Ross and Rachel arrived. They walk to the scene, sans any equipment or stretcher. They find several police and a police officers and a fire engine crew on scene, and the patient. The patient is described as a 48-year-old male, approximately 90 kilograms or 198 pounds, and 5'9" or 175 centimeters. The patient is lying prone with his hands handcuffed behind his back and is yelling, fuck you, along with other obscenities. Although it probably didn't sound like that. It was rather like, fuck you. Yeah. But there we go. The patient is documented as being, I guess, grimy would be nice. The word, and noted to be wearing multiple layers of clothing. So probably a resident of the area.
Okay.
Police tell the crew that, per witnesses, the patient and another male had gotten into a brief fight, which had ended prior to their arrival, with the other combatant fleeing the scene. They approached this individual, and on contact, he became belligerent with the police, refusing to cooperate and yelling obscenities at them. He was handcuffed shortly after, and police are requesting that EMS check out the patient so that they could be taken into custody. They report that the patient is known to them as an alcohol user, and they believe that the patient is very inebriated. They have cleared the patient of weapons, and they report that the patient appeared uninjured. All right, so Chris, what are your thoughts on this?
So right off the bat, I have kind of a pet peeve A couple things. There's not a lot to go off of right now. I mean, there's not, I mean, I'm not here. I'm not saying this to rag on cops at all. And we've mentioned it many times on the show. You know, cops are very helpful for us on scene. But that being said, you know, they don't necessarily have EMS training that we do. I'm not saying they can't recognize an injury, but what I am saying is that they can certainly miss one if they're not trained to look. And so I don't like the fact that I mean, maybe you didn't say this. This is what I heard, though.
Okay.
I heard them say something along the lines of like, hey, come check the limes. Something along the limes. Something along the citrus. Anyway, something something along the lines of you know, come clear a patient for PD or come check them out so I can take them into custody. I don't like that phrasing because it kind of poisons the well a little bit, right? Like it's kind of saying like, hey, come check a box so that I can take this guy to jail. Basically what they're telling you the end result that they want. You know what I mean? And then they kind of say like, hey, we know him. We think he's just drunk. He doesn't look injured to us. And so these are things that best case scenario, the police are 100% correct. Worst case scenario, they're 100% wrong and you take them as correct. And that's the worst case scenario. So it's nice, but this kind of gives you a little bit of an uphill battle in the sense that you've got to go in there and just be like, hey, man, I hear what you're saying, but I got to do my own assessment. Like if you're calling me in here for this, I've got to do my own assessment. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that this doesn't help you. The police report of the injuries doesn't help you at all because it's you need to go do your own assessment. Because if you don't, your call winds up on this show. And now given the last time I made a smart ass remark about, hey, it's on this show, so I know something went wrong. The guy ended up getting a refusal and the episode ended, but I'm going to make this smart-ass remark again. Kind of just going off our past common history, I'm going to make the smart-ass remark again and just say like, hey, like, there's probably a reason this is on the show. A great way to get your call on the show is to just take bystander assessments at face value.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this out there. Even if you go in there and someone's like, I'm a trauma nurse or I'm an off-duty paramedic and they give you a report like this, it does you no good. You need to do the report yourself, no matter who is telling you.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm going to say, speaking of poisoning the well, I did open this with, this was sent to us by a QA committee. So
fair enough.
That's
true.
It's a pretty safe assessment, like a pretty safe assumption to be like, yeah this is not going to end well. Okay, well, let's find out more. So Rachel and Ross approach the fire crew, who's already present, and the Central Perk fire medic, Joey, asks paramedic Rachel, hey, how you doing? But hopefully in a more like professional, appropriate manner. Fire provided Ross and Rachel with the following vitals. Level of consciousness, alert, and spewing obscenities.
Gotcha.
Respirations, 18 a minute, and a CBG or BGL of 147 milligrams per deciliter, which is 8.16 millimoles.
Gotcha.
All right, so Joey tells Ross and Rachel that the patient hasn't really complied with vitals being taken. For instance, they can't get the autocuff to read, and the patient, when they try and put the finger probe from their monitor on the patient's finger, he just kind of wiggles it off. They tell Rachel that they are also familiar with this patient, and yes, he is normally very intoxicated in their dealings, though not usually this mean.
Just want to make sure, when you say they, you mean Ross.
Sorry. Not Ross, Joey. Joey.
Joey, they is in the fire department.
Yep, the fire department. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So the patient continues to yell from the prone position. Ross does attempt to talk to the patient to establish A&O questions, but the patient doesn't answer those questions or respond other than continuing to yell obscenities at him. And this is a moment where I want it to dig in more, but that is the information I have, is that the patient just continued to yell obscenities. There is an attempt to palpate a radial pulse by one of the fire crew, but with the handcuffs and the patient's kind of movement, they are unable to really feel anything. In the QA process, it's revealed that police were asked about removing the handcuffs, but they are reluctant to do so and said no. So there's a discussion on scene between the agencies, and Rachel tells PD and fire that, like, hey, so we're just going to have to sedate the patient so that we can evaluate them, meaning that the patient will have to be transported by EMS to the hospital. So, Chris, the agreed upon plan is that the patient will get 5 milligrams for sed intramuscularly. Okay. And once sedate, they will be uncuffed and placed supine on the backboard and then handcuffed to it, as that's what the police officers want. Soft restraints will be used to secure the feet, and the police request that the crew take the patient to the closest hospital if they need to be transported. And Rachel agrees to this.
Okay.
You have thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just to tack on to like what I was talking about earlier, is this is just kind of more poisoning the well, in the sense of like we're saying, oh, hey, take him to the closest hospital. Well, that's a clinical decision, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's just as much clinical decision as starting an IV or giving oxygen, which hospital you go to, because that's really going to affect the patient outcome depending on like what's available. And if I recall correctly, you said the closest hospital is a doesn't really do much hospital. Or not doesn't do much, but they're not, you know.
Yeah, they're not a trauma hospital. They're not a cath lab. They're
right. You know, and my big thing is, I'm worried about, I'll tell you where my brain's going, is there's going to be something trauma here, right? Because we have an intoxicated person who's in a fight.
Yeah.
Trauma has occurred at some point, you know. How severe it is, we don't know yet, but we'll see. And so I don't like this part of it where we have a police officer is essentially making a clinical decision. Rachel shouldn't agree to that. What Rachel's response should be at this point is like, hey, if they're appropriate for that hospital, sure. But just be aware, you know, officer, they may not be. So, and then do your complete assessment.
Yeah, so, I agree. I think the way things are phrased can, you know, like can really kind of paint the, like, if for, you know, like if you are asking like, hey, would you be able to transport this to the closest hospital? That would be better for us.
Right.
That's a different thing than saying like transport them to the closest hospital.
Yeah.
But those are easy to kind of like misconstrue.
Right.
And, you know, I know as a new paramedic, a lot of times, you know, like there were times where I'm like, who's in charge here? Like ultimately, like if the police tell me to fucking, do I go there? Like they have the guns.
Yeah. They're not going to shoot me, but I mean like, but I don't even know what laws apply because there's always confusion. Yeah. Like, okay, if they're in custody, like does the cop essentially, is that essentially their power of attorney? And that's going to vary depending on where you work, I'm sure. Like this is one where I really wish we had the wonderful people from the Standard of Care podcast on here with us. Samantha, she's a lawyer.
Why aren't you here, Samantha?
Yeah, we need to get her back on to do more stuff. But anyway, so, right. So that can be really confusing. But what I will say is there's always a good way to respond to this. Remember, when you're on scene, your job, and this is how it will be seen by a lawyer, by the way, your job is to provide the best, make clinical decisions in the patient's best interest, regardless of what anybody else on scene is saying. If there are laws in place that turn power over to another agency, and you still need to say, my decision is to take him to this hospital, if that agency has a legal power to disagree with you and change that decision, that's on them. But make them make that change. Make them, you know what I mean? Make them be wrong. Make them be against you if that's the case. But now I do want to say is, the biggest way that I think to get out of these situations is don't create a battle in the first place. That's the best way to avoid having to win a battle is don't start one. And so,
okay. How do you mean? Yeah.
Okay. So exactly. So like, let's say, so we don't know exactly how this officer requested this. You know, they could have said like, hey, if you can take him here. That to me is the greatest way. But sometimes you're like, hey, all right, I'll need you to take him to this hospital. You know, if they come, they say, hey, take him to this hospital if you got to transport him. You know, if it's very blunt like that. Don't respond in a way that's abrasive. Because I've seen paramedics do this. Well, they'll be like, I mean, if he can't go to the hospital, I'm not going to take him there. You know, like don't start with an abrasive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what I mean. So because that's going to start a battle. The best way to respond, I think, in that case is affirm. Be like, hey, Absolutely. I get it. If we can, we'll definitely go there. Just be aware that there are certain things to where I would not be able to take me to that hospital depending on the injury. So let me get the assessment done really quick. And if they're good to go, we're definitely going there. If they're not, I'll let you know.
Perfect. Yeah.
And that,
no, absolutely.
That's the way I'd approach it. Approach it from the aspect of being on the same team and letting them know that you are trying to accommodate their request. You just may not be able to because, hey, I got to follow rules too. And this is what my rules say.
Excellent. Well anyway. Said, sir.
All right.
Yeah.
So moving on.
All right. So Ross returns to their ambulance and they grab their necessary equipment, stretcher, backboard, some soft restraints, and their med kit. Rachel draws up 5 milligrams of Versed and administers to the patient's right deltoid.
Okay.
Several minutes later.
Now, are you sure it's the left deltoid? And is the patient right or left hand dominant?
I don't know. I did not ask.
Why do you work here?
The guy said the chart said it was the right deltoid. I don't know, man. Several minutes later, the patient noticeably relaxed, and police were able to remove their handcuffs and hold the patient's arm while some of the crew placed a backboard under the patient. Ross and Rachel reported that the patient did like weekly fight, but was able to be restrained fairly easily and handcuffed again. And they were able to get soft restraints on the patient's ankles.
Okay.
All right. So once the patient secured on the backboard, the patient was then placed on the stretcher and taken to the ambulance. And the first set of vitals and assessment were documented as done approximately 9 minutes after the patient was secured. So this is presumably in the just prior to transport in the ambulance.
Okay, really.
And
quick, here is, I do have a question. So how many minutes now total since patient contact? Because I know they originally weren't able to get vitals because they were combative. So they did some sedation, and now they're able to get vitals, and that was 9 minutes after the sedation. Do we know what the time frame is between patient contact and sedation?
Yeah, so the answer to that is for the ambulance crew was about 10 minutes on scene setting up for this.
Okay, so it's been about 19 minutes since patient contact before sedation or before vitals then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And longer with the fire department because they were there first, although they did get the, you know, respirations at 18 and the blood sugar.
Okay. I don't know if I believe the respirations at 18, just because that's what all of us, I'm not just saying fire departments, that's what all of us write when we didn't count. And I just find it really hard to believe that a guy laying on the ground, prone, by the way, so you can't see his chest, who's screaming, fuck you, that someone's like, 1, 2, 3. You know, no one's doing that. No, yeah, first of all, and the other thing too is 18's not divisible by 4. Like the most common method of counting.
You're not supposed to divide by 4 with breathing. You're supposed to count it for 30 seconds.
You can
do
the
divide by 4. Yeah, man. Yeah, because that's how you get a good pattern. Yep.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Here's the thing, though. I don't think they did that either.
Well, okay. Chris, hold on to your hat. Hold on. Actually, are you wearing a hat?
I'm not, but I can be.
Okay. Put on a hat.
All right. Hang on.
And then hold on to it.
All right. Hat is in place. Holding on to hat.
Okay. Perfect. What hat is it, by the way?
It's a sock because I couldn't get that quickly to a hat, but I did take off my left sock, put it on my head, ergo hat. So
now are you wearing it? Hold on. Did you pull it over your head?
No.
Right, you know what?
No, it's just laying limply over my head. It's actually just literally pinned underneath my headphones. So... I'm actually not joking with you, but I don't know why, because it doesn't matter because this is an audio format and you're not even here.
I know. But now I need to visualize it. Is it going across like a toupee, a comb over, or is it going forward? Yes.
Forth.
Okay. Perfect. Good. Okay. That's the way it needs to be. And hold on to it. Here is the assessment that was documented. Level of consciousness, groans to pain.
Okay.
Airway.
This is post Versed.
Post Versed.
Okay. Yep.
And 9 minutes post Versed, now in the ambulance.
Gotcha.
All right. So airway, patent, breathing. The patient is documented as breathing at a rate of 16 a minute.
See, and I don't believe that post Versed. So you're telling me he went You're telling me that his sedated ass is doing 16 a minute, but his writhing on the ground, fuck you ass, is doing 18? It's only a 2-breath difference? Now do we see why I don't believe the 18?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Fair enough.
All right. But what I'm going to say is this part, circulation, is documented as CMS present times 4. That's the one I have a little bit of a hard time going with because...
Yeah. How to... Right.
Sir, groaneth pain if you feel this.
Well, I mean, you could.
I guess you could. Yeah,
you could push the bottom of the foot, and if they go, like that, then you know they have it. But my I don't know, my big... I don't know. I'm just going back to like, did you take off the shoes? Like, did you? Anyway, yeah. I mean, I guess they might have. I don't know. I'll cut my negativity out there. But still, yeah, I mean, you could have. They could have pinched the foot or something like that.
Maybe I jumped to conclusions, but I guess it's just weird when someone's like, yeah, the pulse, motor, sensory, that's all present. They, you know, they follow it like, cause it's like, hey, sir, can you wiggle your feet? Can you feel me touching this toe? That kind of stuff is usually the question. And like, sir, wake up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Somebody get some Remazicon.
Someone splash some water on his face. So yeah, it could be like if you saw him kind of like, I mean, the way I see this going is like, well, he was writhing around on the ground, moving his legs earlier. Now he's sedate. If I pinch his feet, he moans. I'm going to call it CMS times 4. It's plausible, but I agree. I don't know. I have my doubts.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other part that sort of adds to the fire of, did you really do an assessment, though? Gotcha. Is the rest of the patient assessment on the chart was documented as assessed without abnormality.
Gotcha.
Like all of it. And in other words, this is one of those features, and some charting programs have this, where you can just hit a button and it will fill it all out for you, as in, yep, this is all good.
So just so you know, so Spencer, you know what WNL stands for, right, in charting?
Yeah, within normal limits.
Yeah, no, it actually stands for we never looked. That's what WNL stands for. So if you have a WNL button on your charting program, it's...
that is phenomenal. It's almost as good as... my stepdad told me once, because he drove for... like a city bus for a transit company, and he was going through training, and he goes, he's like, yeah, the guy telling me, he's like, the R on the shear on the gear stands for wrong, because if you're doing this in a bus, it's wrong. Gotcha. Don't ever do this. I was like, yeah,
that's fair.
Within number of limits, we never looked. That's yeah.
There you go. All right. Anyway, let's move on along. All right. Here.
Gotcha. So vitals at this time, GCS is documented as eyes 1, verbal 2, and motor 4.
Okay.
Heart rate is 62. SpO2 is 90% on room air. And the BP, 171 over 100, autocuff. Yeah. And respirations, as previously said, 16 a minute.
Me too.
All right. Prior to departing the scene, Ross does put the patient on a non-rebreather mask and set it to 10 liters per minute, which did quickly improve the O2 saturation and brought them to 98%. So, Chris, how are you feeling about this at this moment?
Bad. So here's why. So my brain is still in trauma land because it's been an assault. And I hate assaults. I don't hate assaults. But, I mean, assault calls are... complicated because the way I want, okay, so everyone listening, whenever you have an assault patient, think of them as the same you would as someone who just walked out of a vehicle that was in a rollover 13 times. In other words, their zone for potential injury is everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the problem with assault patients. So the way I look at it is every single part of this guy's body has potential to have some damage to it. And I'm going to start with the important places, like, you know, the head. Now, don't get me wrong. Versed is going to have an impact on things like GCS and SAO2 and the respiratory rate. Okay, it's going to have an impact on that. But gosh, with the eyes one, that means no response, not even to pain. Usually if someone's just drunk and maybe stoned off the 5 milligrams of Versed I gave them, which by the way, 5 milligrams is not exactly a whopping amount, especially I am. I mean, yeah. It's an amount. It'll have an impact, but I mean, like, it's not whopping. But if I can't even get them to open their eyes at all, like, oh, that's concerning. And then like a 2 where it's just incomprehensible, like that's a 2 for verbal, is incomprehensible of verbals, like, ugh, that's bad too. And then motor is 4, which now I got to think that's normal flexion, right?
Yeah, that's, yeah. So there's, well, that withdraws, I believe, because 6 for the motor is obeys command. 5 is localizes pain, and 4 is withdraw.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right. So 4 would be like withdraws from pain. It's probably when they were doing their CMS, pinching the foot, probably pulled it back. Anyway. So, okay.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go. Okay. So all we right, have an so overall.
Basically, they did do an assessment here.
So we've got a GCS. Right. Exactly. So we've got a GCS of 7, which again, we have some Versed on board. The 90% SAO2, you know, that's fine. That could be, you know, due to some Versed causing a little bit of respiratory depression. I don't know. You know, put them on the NRB. That's great. What really kind of has me worried is this heart rate of 62 and a blood pressure of 171 over 100. Now, 62 is not technically bradycardic, but gosh, it's getting close. And the BP is definitely hypertensive. And as we know, when we start seeing that bradycardic heart rate with a hypertensive blood pressure, you need to start thinking about Cushing's triad and herniation with a brain bleed. Because the other part of Cushing's triad is irregular respirations. It's not really, I mean, 16 a minute is all that's written here. We don't really have whether it's irregular or not. You know, it could be correct. I'll stop beating that dead horse. But, you know, we do have the more, we've mentioned this before, respirations are actually really hard to count. We're pretty bad at them.
Yeah.
Especially with like combative angry patients. This guy has me worried. I'm worried about a potential head injury with this guy. And also, I guess I kind of assumed they did a head to toe when I saw that CMS present times 4, because that's kind of like, I mean, that's how I do my head to toes. Like as I'm doing my head to toes and I get down the arms, I'll test the hands, then I'll do the rest, and then I'll test the feet, you know. But have they done a head to toe?
So, yes. And I mean, in the fact that everything in their chart said, you know, assess without abnormality.
So
and
the chart says they've done a head to toe. Okay.
Their chart says they've done a head to toe.
Gotcha. I keep forgetting, we didn't get this from the responders on scene, did we? We got this from the QAK. Okay.
Yeah. And I want to add, like, I was going to save this for later, but they did say, like, they did insist that they did look at the patient and that the patient appeared uninjured from during their assessment. All right. So they stood by this. Anyway.
All right. Well.
Here we go. So with that non-rebreather on, Ross drove Rachel code 1 to the local AED, which is approximately 8 minutes away from the scene. It's not approximately, it actually is 8 minutes away from the scene. Okay. According to the chart, the crew is told that a police officer will follow them to the ED. So the police did not ride with them.
Gotcha.
The crew radio the ED to let them know they're coming in with an intoxicated male patient who required restraints and sedation. And the trip was described as uneventful, and the crew did get one more set of vitals as they pull into the emergency department. Alert to pain, GCS is 7, heart rate is 60, SpO2 is now 96%, respirations are described as 12 a minute, and BP is 182 over 105 via the autocuff.
Did we ever get lung sounds?
Assessed with
yes, we did. WNL. Yeah. Copy that. All right.
So the patient was taken into the emergency department, continued on O2, but sans any other monitor equipment. So not on their monitor pulse ox or any of that. They don't believe they did put the patient on a cardiac monitor. And taken into one of the rooms. It took several minutes for an RN and the police officer to arrive. But after they did, they were able to move the patient on the board over to the bed, and report is given to RN Monica and the crew clear.
Nice.
So the crew did get follow-up, but in the form of we'll call it a concern slash complaint from Dr. Janice at the local ED. They report that shortly after the crew dropped off the patient became essentially apneic on their assessment and required intubation. They also found that the patient had a blown left pupil. So that is a pupil that is fixed and dilated. It's gotcha. Very large. They also had a puncture wound, though albeit a small one, to their right upper thigh. Multiple contusions on the body, etc. So the patient was ultimately found to have an epidural hematoma and mm-hmm. was ultimately emergently transferred to the trauma center for surgery. And, of course, this call was flagged for review by the agency. And so what are your thoughts based on the information we have? That is the call.
I doubt the head-to-toe assessed with no abnormalities is true.
Yeah,
I mean, things can develop over time. Like, you know, puncture wounds can just appear. That happens. Actually, I'm kidding. Okay. That doesn't happen.
So the puncture wound. So this actually did come up because they were like, hey, did you remove clothing? And they say, like, no, we didn't, like, take off the patient's pants. They did remove his shoes and socks, as you had asked. They didn't cut shirts, but they'd, like, lifted up the layers and glanced at his, you know, at the patient's chest.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, the patient was backboarded, so they didn't look at the patient's back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's, sure. Like, you know, or at least we don't know that they looked at the patient's right. back.
Well, tell you what. Yeah. Why don't we summarize? I'm going to go ahead and summarize the call.
Okay.
How about this? I'm going to summarize what I wrote down, and we'll see if that represents the call. okay. You just let me know if that's true. Alrighty. So we get it. Ross and Rachel are still together at this point.
Wrong. Sorry. Go
Damn
on.
Damn it. All righty. It actually turns out it wasn't even a Friends reference. Something else. This is actually a Star Wars reference. All right. Sorry. Shout out to all the people who keep asking us to do another Star Wars episode. Anyway. Yeah. So, right. So Ross and Rachel, they get dispatched to, oh, by the way, was there something significant about their unit number?
It's the address to the fake apartment that they have in New York, according to the interwebs.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, because I'm like, that's a very specific number. Anyway, 495. So unit 495 with Ross and Rachel, they get dispatched to clear a patient for PD or check a patient before they go to the jails or whatever. They get cleared to a well poisoning, or they get called to a well poisoning. And anyway, so they get called to clear a patient for PD. They go there and they find, this is in an area where the houseless frequently congregate, and they find a man who is handcuffed, prone, and screaming obscenities at everybody. The police say, hey, he drinks a lot. We think he's drunk right now, and he doesn't look injured for us. Can you clear him so we can take him to jail? And the fire department on scene is like, yeah, he's also familiar to us, and we think he's super drunk. Here's a CBG. Oh, and he's breathing at 18 times a minute. LOL, I think is what they said at the end of that, too. Anyway, So at that point, he's alert. But unfortunately, because he is very angry, he's not really letting them take vital signs. So they decide to go ahead and sedate the patient with 5 milligrams of Versed. And it's about 10 minutes after the ambulance arrives there. So the guy becomes sedate. And about 9 minutes after that, they got him in the back of the ambulance and they start to do an assessment. They find that, you know, his GCS is now down to a whopping 7. He's now breathing at only 16 times per minute. He's setting at 90% of room air. They correct that with some oxygen, and he has super high blood pressure with a low heart rate. They continue on to the ER. Nothing much really changes. He still has a lower heart rate. He still has a high blood pressure. And later on, the ER calls back and says, hey, he's got a head bleed, and he's got a bunch of contusions all over him. Oh, and a puncture wound in his upper thigh. And we had to transfer him to a trauma hospital. Do we know what the patient did ultimately, or do we not?
I do not know that information.
All right. Well, yeah. So that's a rundown of the call. Did I get it right?
Yeah. I'm going to presume that they live to go live on a farm, that they crossed over some kind of a bridge. And
it's probably where my childhood dog is.
Jesus.
No, you went to a farm.
Yes. No, definitely.
Right.
Definitely. Yep. The big farm in the sky. All right. Big Sky Farm. It's a real place. It's out in Montana.
Right. Gotcha.
Jesus.
All right. Moving on along.
So
I think since the all dogs go to, or what, a type one for doctor, I think since that episode, we've mentioned a dog dying in every single episode.
Well, I was going to, since you were like, by the way, that you shortchanged you were like, RSI, do fire departments do it better? You'll have to listen to find out. The answer is, it's like, are you just going to give away, like, Simba's dad dies, you know, like,
but it's a Disney movie. Everyone knows that.
The people who haven't seen it don't.
No, yeah, they
like,
do.
Okay, it's so it
the people who have never watched a Disney movie in their life, I guess, or if all they saw was Frozen. Okay, here's a spoiler alert for every Disney movie you watch where there's a father at the beginning. There's not a father at the end, okay? I'm just going to point that out.
Okay. All right. You know what? Wow, we've got off the rails.
Yeah, we did. We've gone off Pride Rock and fell into a big old stampede of caribou.
Oh man.
Or we went Jesus. Off the rocks and were washed away by a river like an Arlo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There's the pole.
Yeah. Boy, I think there is, despite this being kind of a short call, there is a lot to unpack in this. I think there's definitely confirmation bias, as you mentioned.
Very true.
Poisoning of the well. I think that's an apt term to use on this call.
Yeah.
You know, what else do you see, man?
We'll talk a little bit about, you know, the assessment. The hard part about this is we don't truly know the assessment that was done because this is given to us by a third party. It's not given to us by the responders that were there. But I do have some questions about the assessment. And kind of one of the things that we got this from QAQI committee, and this is kind of what I would. So here's the thing, like, this is the kind of call where things were missed. You know, I mean, it's really hard to say that things weren't missed. I think what the question comes down to is that, was it reasonable? Would a reasonable paramedic or a prudent paramedic, would they have missed these things? Because here's the thing. Sometimes you can be the best paramedic in the world. You can do everything right and you're still going to miss shit. It just happens.
Yeah.
Okay. But what you have to be careful of is that you don't just say that that's the case every time you miss something. So you have to review your actions. Your actions need to be reviewed by others to make sure that you're not getting a little rusty in there. Okay. And that maybe you didn't miss things that you shouldn't have missed. So that's why I said, and one of the questions that I think is important is actually asking about pregame, because we didn't have pregame in this because we didn't get it, because we got it from the QAQI committee and they didn't really ask, or if they did ask, they didn't tell us. And I think that's actually important, because when you're talking about a case where maybe somebody missed an assessment because the well was poisoned, then dispatch information and that kind of stuff can play a role. And the attitude you have going into the call can absolutely play a role. So, you know, I mean, we don't have much to talk about in terms of pregame because we don't know on this episode. But it is important to ask about that from a QAQI perspective.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think we'll probably have to talk about the assessment, you know, itself a little bit more in depth.
As documented, you mean?
As documented, how the assessment was documented. There are some potential outs for the crew that I see, especially when it comes to contusions, because contusions may not develop fully or develop as much to where they're as obvious until they've been in the ER for a bit. That I get. There's a missed puncture wound. So we'll kind of talk about that kind of as things go on. And also there's some maskers, right? Like the patient was potentially drunk and they got Versed. But we'll kind of talk about why you don't want to go with those things. Let's see. And let's just kind of go from there. Okay, I think I'll also have some other stuff. No, I already talked about that. And then we'll kind of talk about their overall treatment, I think, at the end. We'll just kind of come up with that.
All right. Well, let's start off potential system problems. I think you hit the nail on the first thing with your irritation, your irk.
Yeah.
Irkedness.
Yeah. at clearing patients for police.
Yeah, like this really bothers me with like oddly enough, not necessarily like in all trauma cases, you know, because like there's times where it's like, hey, they ran from that, like we knocked them over, and they have an abrasion, like we just need you to make like check vitals, and the patient's alert, oriented, etc. But where like I get frustrated is when like the patient is altered, or when they're like, hey, they took drugs,
right?
Like we want to take them to jail, can you check them? And like I don't know what they took, like I'm not a pharmacist. They should.
I mean, well, here's the thing. I would push back. I mean, not really push back, but, you know, even to your comment of like, you know, if we knocked them over and they have an abrasion, I think what you have to do is you have to approach these calls as it doesn't matter who called you.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's the cops. It doesn't matter if it's anything. I mean, it's kind of to say that you would do an assessment differently than if it was like, hey, this is, you know, this was Jerry at the old folks home and he was knocked over by gravity, you know, or whatever. They fell, you know, but truth, we've seen some decent injuries from gravity, just pulling a little hard to the left, you know, and people falling over, let alone you get body checked by a cop. Like,
I'm glad you clarified, like, I'm glad you bring that up. Cause I don't want to imply that like, oh, hey, all right, it was just an abrasion. Like there are times where I'm far more comfortable, like I do my assessment as I would for anybody.
Right.
But I am more comfortable saying like, yes, based on the mechanism, based on the findings I have,
right,
I think this person will be okay to go to jail.
Sure.
Or, you know, like, or to go with you to wherever you guys are going to take him.
The way
But like, there is still the like, but I could be wrong. And I always throw that out there, you know, and.
And here's one of the things that I kind of want to point out is like, so basically you shouldn't, a patient that you would not get a refusal from, you shouldn't let go to jail.
Yeah.
That's the way I would look at it, you know? And so if you have someone's like, yeah, look, I fell, I got an abrasion, but I am A&O first place time and event. I haven't taken any drugs or alcohol. I'm not on any blood thinners. I'm fine. I would let that person sign a refusal in a heartbeat. And so if you got that same guy who's just in a cop car, I'd let him sign a refusal in a heartbeat. Where this gets kind of muddled is basically anything where there's actual potential for injury, or if the person is claiming that they are more injured, even if they're more injured than they maybe are. The problem is here, the reason the police are calling you is one reason only. It's a liability. If you have a police officer who feels the patient is truly A-OK, and they're like, hey, I just need to clear him so I can take him to the jail, he's saying, I just need you to take responsibility for the clinical outcome of this patient. That is what they are saying. If they are calling you and they really don't think the patient's injured, because otherwise, why else would they call you?
Yeah.
There's no other reason. So you got to think to yourself, am I good taking clinical responsibilities? Because I can tell you, this is what I will guarantee you. If they take that patient to the jail and something bad happens, what will they say, Spencer?
Oh, they'll say, well, EMS checked him out.
Exactly.
Ross and Rachel.
Exactly.
And Rachel Green and Ross Geller of Unit 495.
They will.
Yep.
They will. They will absolutely say that. So you need to just bear that in mind. Every time you check a patient for police, what you are doing is you are taking on the responsibility of the clinical outcome of that patient, and you must be willing to stand by your assessment. So if you don't fucking do one, you are screwing yourself from the get-go. So that is my problem with the whole police asking to clear patient stuff, is that oftentimes there's a well poisoning when it's the police. We work with them. We like them. Generally, we're all on the same side, but they're kind of pushing us for one thing. You got to do the full assessment. And again, I can't definitively say that this crew did a lackluster assessment. What I can say is they had the same outcome as if they would have done a lackluster assessment. Well, actually, no. If they did a truly lackluster assessment, they would have put him in the cop car and left. But
that would have been a whole different thing.
That would have been a whole different, which I think we've done a similar call to that, actually. I think one of our earlier calls, they actually had a patient end up coding in the back of a cop car.
The
guy did a bunch of meth and had R-on-T in the back of a cop car. At least we think it was R-on-T. Anyway.
So
that's kind of, that's where I met with this whole system. It's just, gosh, I mean, keep that on your radar and look at it the same as you do Refusal. And if you listen to our show long enough, you know that, like, hey, refusals are no small matter. And we often kind of treat them like they are, right? Because, hey, I don't have to work. Just sign here and I can leave. Refusals need to be the ones that you really, really pay attention to. These are exactly the same. You are taking it on your shoulders when you leave without helping or assessing these people. So
yeah,
there you go. And and you want to just kind of move on to the assessment since I keep kind of bringing it up?
Yeah, well, so I have a couple thoughts on the assessment. One of them is documentation wise. And the other is, I think there are things in here in this call that sort of indicate that confirmation bias played in very hard. You pointed out the flagging, like, yeah, we can take him to that hospital before really any assessment had been done. Like, yes, you've been standing there listening to a guy scream obscenities at you, you know, but like, are they screaming obscenities at you to you? Like, specifically, are they responding to to comments you are saying, or are they just yelling crazy shit because their brain is bleeding? and they're also drunk. Like, those two can be, they're not mutually exclusive. Those two things can happen at the same time. So I think if they had done assuming that they did do an assessment, then just hitting like, yep, assessed without abnormalities, one, that's clearly wrong when like there's a puncture wound on the leg.
Right. Very true. Even though they admitted later on, they're like, hey, we didn't take the pants down, but we did everything else. Then you still documented incorrectly.
Yeah. I think that's the thing is like, well, then that dishonesty sort of lends itself to the rest of it being dishonest.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's, if you lied here, then what makes me believe you anywhere else?
Yeah. And everyone knows there's a fucking button that will just fill in shit for you. Oh, yeah. So that is not you are not the only person
who knows. No, you're
that.
Not.
Oh, yeah. Like, this will save time.
It
really just kind of shows, I think what this assessment, what they documented anyway, sort of says that there's that the confirmation bias hit hard, and it's understandable, and I can totally see like the thought process that this medic may have had, which is, we've got a drunk guy, he doesn't like us, he's, you know, super drunk, the police say he's drunk, the fire department says he's got a history of drinking, he's, you know, like, they've said he's been intoxicated previously, and he's just more mean now, but he got in a fight. And then we're sedating him, and so of course he's going to relax, and he's probably unhealthy because he's a drunk, and so his blood pressure is going to be high, and oh, I gave him Versed, so his O2 sets are going down. Like, those are all things that make sense to that narrative. Even
the alcohol also helps O2 sets go down.
Yeah, exactly. So like, all of those things really do like tie into that narrative, and they like, if you just go like, there's nothing in there that would really make you go or make a person go like, this doesn't fit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless you are looking to find ways that you are wrong. You know, and that's where your point of like, you have to do the full assessment comes in. Don't just go like, this is the most likely explanation. Because sure, it most likely is that. It most likely was that this guy was just going to be a super drunk guy, right? Like that.
Well, based on history, I suppose, yeah.
Based on like the details, the facts, based on all that, it seems like that would be the most likely case, but that's not our job.
No, it's not. Well, and this kind of goes back to something we've talked about plenty of times before, and that is like the intoxicated trauma patients, these are the paramedic license collectors, right? This is the call where people end up severely injured and ignored because they're just drunk. And the reality of it is this, is that when someone is truly inebriated and you've stacked Versed on top of that, which we should probably talk about their choice to sedate in a little bit, but which I agree with, by the way, or at least I don't vehemently disagree, but we'll talk about that in a bit. When you stack those things on, I'm going to tell you this, you can't actually assess their mental status anymore. You really can't.
Yeah.
Not accurately. I mean, you can get drunk enough to where your GCS falls down to an intubatable level just on alcohol by itself. But the problem is it just looks like a fucking head injury. You know, yeah. And it's so difficult to tell. And that's where these things just kind of suck. I mean, and it does suck because a lot of times you will find yourself doing this. You will take someone to a trauma system hospital or to a trauma hospital. You'll take them to a level one and they're gonna be like, yeah, the guy's just drunk. It happens. And some hospitals, depending on the culture there, they will give you shit for it. No, he smelled like alcohol. So what?
Yeah.
Alcoholic patients get hurt. They actually get hurt a little easier than everybody else does. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, I mean, I get it. It sucks. You're right. I mean, all of these symptoms are explainable by alcohol, but just because they're explainable by alcohol does not unexplain or, you know, does not cast out the possibility of a head injury at all. And if you cannot accurately assess someone's LOC, then you're left with mechanism. And the mechanism of assault is a really, really severe mechanism. And you just got to take the risk at getting mocked. Just do it.
Yeah. And I will say this, in terms of charting, what I would say is add more details into that assessment piece. Right. And I know it sucks when you're running, you know, 12. Who knows how many calls? Yeah, 12 calls. And this is like your 12th one. You're being held over. And this is the guy, and then you've got the angry drunk guy who's handcuffed. Like, I believe me, the want is very big on my end to be let's just fucking get this drunk guy to a hospital. Like,
which I'll actually tell you this. This actually kind of goes back to system problems then. I mean, to be dead honest, when we have overworked paramedics who are fatigued, this is going to happen no matter how good you are. If you're just getting your ass kicked from the moment you clock on to the moment you clock off, which is like 2 hours after you should have clocked off, you're going to make slip ups. Like this one, you are going to be fatigued. It will happen. And that is a system issue. It is a system issue. And so I think that needs to be addressed because even doing this show, like we tend to see, and given I am spitballing here, but and Spence, maybe you'll disagree because I mean, obviously you read more of these calls than I do, but it seems to me that we see these kind of problems because I know we did the episode Everything But the Gun. That was the one where a stroke call was missed. And is again, busy urban system. We tend to see these, it's just a this blank in systems that are overworked. That's where those calls tend to crop up. Where there's a heavy incentive to go home because you never get to go home on time. And it's in an area where you get call after call after call and a good chunk of them are nothing, you know? That's where we start to see these things. So these are system issues. These are system issues, absolutely.
Yeah. And so going back to what I was saying, it's hard to, in those moments when you're like, I don't even want to I don't want to assess this patient to then say like, also, I have to write more in my chart.
Yeah.
But you do need to, you need to show that you're not just hitting the button.
Yeah.
You need to add details in. You know, lifted shirt to inspect chest, no contusions noted. That actually sounds believable.
Yeah.
Beyond, assessed with no abnormalities.
Right.
Because, especially if you miss a puncture wound, then they're going like, this fucker just clicked the button. Respiration's 18. They didn't do a job. They did not do their job.
If you didn't assess something, don't say that you did. Period. The end.
100%. There are valid reasons to assessment deferred due to patient being on backboard. Unable to assess at the time. Assessment deferred due to patient combativeness, which goes into that treatment aspect they gave or said to the patient so that they could do an evaluation.
Do you want to roll right in and talk about sedation?
Let's roll into that. Yeah.
Okay. So, because I've got some thoughts. And here's actually my first thought. And I had this thought not just because of sedation, but just because quiet respirations are hard to count. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. A lot of septic patients get missed. Completely different patient, obviously, I'm talking about now, but septic patients.
Is it?
Who knows? Yeah.
Right.
Septic patients are, they're often tachypneic. Okay. That's one of the signs of sepsis. And we often miss that sign. Septic patients get missed because people miss tachypnea. Because 9 times out of 10, when we notice someone's tachypneic, it's because they're having a respiratory problem and they have these noisy respirations and they're tripoding. And it's just plain obvious. Like you walk in, yeah, that person, they're like, oh, they're begging me to count those respirations. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's when we know someone's tachypneic. But when they're quiet, because here's the thing, that the tachypneic sepsis patient, they don't look like they're in respiratory distress. They don't look like that at all. Because a tachypneic, technically, if you're going by the QSOFA criteria, you're talking a respiratory rate greater than 22. That's actually not blazingly fast. It's just somewhat faster than normal. It's not so fast that you would notice it. They're not going to take a break from speaking.
That's how fast I breathe when I watch Star Wars.
Right.
There it is.
Yeah, I could take that to a place where I'd have to edit, but I won't. Anyway, this is kind of the same thing, especially if you're worried about like a head injury, which they should have been because it's an assault patient. Put an ETCO2 monitor on. It's a super easy way to count because you don't fucking have to. And it's really obvious because I think it's like, well, they don't always put accurate numbers. Yeah, but it's really obvious when they're not. Like if you look down there and there's like no waveform or the waveform doesn't look like the typical breath ETCO2 waveform, then yeah, it's probably inaccurate. But if it has the waveform, it's probably accurate, at least at counting the respirations, even if the value is not spot on.
So let me put it this way.
Yeah.
It's more accurate than documenting 16 or 18.
Right. Exactly. Or at least if it is 16 or 18, you can be like per ETCO2. You know what I mean? So
like you can. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's exactly. So like put the ETCO2 monitor on this guy, especially if you're then going to sedate them, which can then further depress the respirations.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to take the firm stance of you should be monitoring capnography on all patients who get sedation.
Agreed.
That should just
Agreed.
Not be a.
Yeah.
You should not do one without the other.
Yeah, 100% agree. SAO2 and capnography should be mandatory. Yep.
And here's a thought, Chris. Curious what your thoughts are on this. The falling O2 sat, we know that it can take some time for that O2 sat to decrease, even if the patient's apneic. At what point did the apnea start?
Yeah,
we don't know.
It's true. Well, it depends. Well, it can take some time the SO2 to decrease in someone who has like denitrogenated lungs, I suppose. But I mean, considering they were like 19 minutes on scene, 9 minutes after the patient was sedated, I would say, considering like if you take a healthy person and you denitrogenate their lungs completely, they'll last 8 minutes above 90% apneic. So I don't think that was this guy. I think his apnea, I mean, it may have occurred while he was in the care of these guys. But I mean, like if they were using passive oxygenation without ventilation and getting a good response, I'd say he probably wasn't completely apneic by the time he got there. Mm, I don't think it was 16, but I wouldn't say he was apneic while in the ambulance necessarily.
Yeah.
So that aside though, let's talk about like, So we've talked about how assessing this guy is difficult with intoxicants, including the Versed we gave him.
Yeah.
In my opinion, though, I think the Versed was actually called for because it was given because they couldn't get an assessment on the guy because they tried. He'd kick it away. And also, I'm also one of those people that's like, hey, you know what? Like, I value your health. I also value mine. I don't want to get punched by you.
Yeah.
Here's some anti-punch juice. I can guarantee you could give Manny Pacquiao, you could give, who's the Irish guy that recently snapped his leg in his last fight? McGregor.
Oh.
You could give McGregor Versed. They will be all substantially less punchy. So Versed's
definitely less kicky.
Yeah, exactly. What we're trying to say is either use Versed or snap their leg. Those are the two options you have clinically. Clinically.
Make sure you offer them.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Hey, you Versed, I could snap your leg. don't say this to anybody, please.
Oh my God, Jesus.
Or if you do, send us the call.
Send us the call.
Let us know how it went.
we can ridicule you, I guess.
Absolutely. But I think in this case, I think the Versetta is warranted. And the other thing you also have to point out there is people are like, but it's going to obstruct your assessment. It is, but your assessment's already obstructed with the alcohol. And so all the points that I made earlier about being like, hey, someone who's drunk is going to also potentially mask your ability to assess a head injury. It doesn't become more or less true by adding Versed. The only thing that does become true by adding Versed is you are less likely to get punched in the face and you might actually be able to do an assessment on this guy.
Yeah. I think that's the point. I think you bring up the solid point, which is, some people might go I don't want to give Versed when I haven't been able to do an assessment because I don't, I don't want to do the wrong thing, find out that the Versed was the wrong thing later.
Yeah.
But if the patient's condition is preventing you from getting that, then I think, start small or, go with your protocol dose. But do something, provide something that will allow you to safely assess the patient. Yeah. And I think that actually that was a good move here.
Sure. Real quick question.
By the way,
do they have any other sedatives at their place?
They have Versed and Haldol as their options for sedation.
Okay.
And I'm used to our protocols in the system that I grew up in, where it was essentially like, hey, you give Versed to patients who took drugs or alcohol. Right. And then Haldol was for
behavioral.
When you weren't sure. Yeah, behavioral.
Yeah.
So this jives with what I know, but I don't have anything other than my protocol book told me this was the way to do it, to back that off of. So,
yeah.
I don't know if Haldol would have been a better drug in this instance or if Versed,
But I think if we look at it from their perspective and the assessment, the information they had, I think Versed would have been the likely choice regardless,
Yeah.
I think, even though it was just a theory that the patient was drunk or acting kind of drunk or they're acting head injured, we don't know. I think Versed was fine and ultimately it did the job. The only thing that I will say, and I'll just reiterate, is that when you're going to sedate, be prepared to support the things that come with sedation, like a decreased respiratory drive, and monitor that with ETCO2 and SAO2. So, did have SAO2. They did have that. That's just that's my take on the call.
Let's talk about the police handcuff piece.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't like it. Unless the police officer's going, I don't like taking handcuffed patients. And unless they're willing to give me a handcuff key.
Yeah.
Because
I have had that done before, by the way. I've had cops hand me a handcuff key. Do you know how to use this?
Oh, yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
He was like, yeah, I'm going to be right behind you. And I'm like, okay, as long as you're right behind me and I have a way to get him out of handcuffs. He goes, well, do you just want to take the handcuff key? I'm like, sure. He's like, you know how to use this? And I took a look at it. I'm like, well, seems obvious. And we went.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm like, yeah, no, just then, we're not going to use your handcuffs. We'll use soft restraints. I think soft restraints are better anyway because handcuffs are not designed for patient comfort. Soft restraints are, are made in a way that will reduce the likelihood of injury should the patient continue to struggle against them.
And if you got to remove them, they're a trauma shear snip away from being removed.
Yeah. Turns out trauma shear is not as great on handcuffs. purely for the fact of if I need to do something with the patient and the handcuff is preventing me, if there is no cop there and I don't have a handcuff key, then you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, that's true. It depends on how they, generally speaking, if they're handcuffed, their hands down by their side, it's kind of hard to be ma, I can't get to anything. But it is nice to be able to move their arms, to start an IV, to be able to move their arm a little bit closer to you when you can't because it's handcuffed. That's tough. And again, you have soft restraints, which are kind of the better option. Let's see, something else about soft restraints. Oh, I also want to just advise, there are hard restraints, zip ties. I don't like zip ties. I have never seen a patient rip it. So soft restraints are primarily made out of nylon webbing, the same stuff backpack straps are made out of. And
with little foam, little foam things around the wrist or ankles.
And you might think, and if you have a blade, I guess those are easy to get through. But generally speaking, there you can't. No one can get through that shit. I've never seen a patient do it. I have seen patients break the zip ties, break the flex cuffs. That I've seen happen, which, by the way, really scary when it happens. But the thing about the flex cuffs is they're more rigid and there is a point. I'm not entirely sure how the guy did it because I was on the other side of him. And then all of a sudden I heard a pop and his hand came up and he looked at his hand as though he was just as surprised as I was. Like, oh, I didn't think that worked. but it was clearly snapped. It wasn't like the mechanism failed or it wasn't like it was loose. It was clearly snapped. And he looked at me and then I just kind of bolted to above his head so he couldn't get to me. And he just sat there and he kept hitting the, he broke the glass. Well, it's plexiglass, but he broke the glass out of the cupboards that are to the right, all the medication cabinets, and just started taking shit out of there and throwing it across over at the bench. He wasn't trying to throw it at me. He just kept throwing it across at the bench. So I'm like, hey, can you stop doing that? He's like, fuck you. I'm like, all right, well, I'm staying here. So
you throw them over there, please. You
throw those things over there. You're just going to give me like extra time to take a shit at the ER. You know, when my partner cleans this mess. It's terrible. Just kidding. Anyway.
Oh, man.
So yeah, so that was kind of my experience with them. So ever since then, I stopped using them because I'm like, well, you know, it makes sense because if you, you know, it is rigid, so it does have a point at which it will break versus those soft restraints do not.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about BLS only provider treatments for this patient.
Yeah.
One, all the things that we said above about assessment still apply. 100%
they apply.
And by the way, write things in. I lifted the shirt to assess this. I did, like, just those little details again make a difference. I guess don't sedate the patient with Versed.
Right, because that would be really out of your scope. Probably get in a lot of trouble for that.
But
if you do, send us the call.
Yeah. If you do that.
It's gonna be like people who wanted to get on 16 and Pregnant or something like that.
Or like Jerry Springer's show. Like,
yeah, all right, they just go and do shit. They're like, all right, I'm just gonna go get knocked up so I can be on this show. Or Teen Mom, that was it. So people wanted to be on Teen Mom, so they were like getting knocked up as teens and trying to get on the show. I don't want people to do that. I don't want people to like do stuff out of their scope so they can get on EMS 2020. That's not what the show is paid for. But yeah, I mean, one thing that I want to point out is assessment is a BLS skill with the exception of 12 lead EKGs. I can't think of any other type of assessment that is not within the BLS scope of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm trying to think of something just to prove you wrong.
What about heart tones? But I'm like, no, you can list for heart tones as a basic. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So
let me know what they are because I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we got S1 and S2, and then there's the others. Yeah.
There's a lub and a dub, and then some kind
of
gallop.
S1 and S2. Yeah, I don't know.
And then there's
an ox. I don't know.
Kentucky. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Kentucky.
Yeah. No, I think that would be like outside of the sedation piece. Nothing really changes. You do your assessment, you document it well. Like in this case, they, you probably will need the police to still unhandcuff him and you still need to restrain the patient. And, you know, restraining them appropriately is still prudent.
Yeah.
And then just continually reassess while you take them to the appropriate hospital.
Yeah. I think that's kind of it.
Yeah.
So how do we end this? Oh, well, hang on. I'll do our housekeeping.
Yeah.
Thanks again, everyone, for listening to yet another episode of EMS 2020. Please make this one of the most listened to episodes ever because it was short and succinct and won't take a lot of editing. So
I know.
Unlike the nearly 3-hour one that set records.
Yeah. Just for the record, I'm at 126 right now and there's like a good 10 minutes of dead dog jokes that you have to cut out. So
yeah, that's true. That is true. I gotta know if I want to leave this in or not even. But anyway, we thank you guys for everything. The show's been just kind of a huge hit for us and the massive success in our lives. And you guys have all been great. We really enjoy you guys. We enjoy the stuff you keep sending in. We enjoy that you keep buying our merch. We enjoy that you interact with us on Facebook. And believe it or not, and I think a lot of you guys get surprised, if you guys message us we generally will respond. It's actually, I would say it's rare that we don't. It may not be right away, but we kind of try and get back to everybody. Most people are like, oh, wow, I'm surprised you guys responded. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised it took us a week and we still did it, but we did it. Anyway, so yeah. So yeah. As always, check us out on social media, EMS20/20 on Facebook, EMS2020 show on Instagram. And that is also where you can find the new call submission form. So if you want your call to be on this show, check out our social media. That'd be in the descriptions on Instagram. If you go to the description or our bio, rather, you'll see the Beacons page. Click the Beacons page. The submission form will be there. If for whatever reason we fail and it's not there, you can still send stuff to EMS2020podcast@gmail.com and we can go from there. Check out RSI. It's our YouTube channel. It's rapid sequence information. You'll know it when you see it. It has our EMS2020 logo on it. And always check out GuardianCME.com where you can get free continuing education. That's right. Free. It's not like paywall free where you like watch two free ones and then pay for everything else. It's just like normal free, where everything is free. Our content is on there. So if you like our show, go get continuing education for just listening to us on GuardianCME.com. Please go check it out. And with that, Spencer, let's take it out awkwardly. We could do a duet with the I'll Be There For You.
Oh, let's do it.
Ready? Yeah. Oh, should we pull up the lyrics?
We probably should.
Here you go. Let's go. Yeah. I'll Be There For You. Oh, shit. I just fisted my mic. That's not what I meant to say. caps lock is on. Don't have to yell at you. I'll Be There For You. Sung by the Rembrandts, by the way.
Wow. All right. Rembrandts.
Which, yeah, nobody knows anything they've done except for that song, by the way.
Yeah. Which, right.
Oh, man. Let's just start with the chorus.
No. So no one told you life was gonna be this way. Your job's a joke. You're broke. Your life's DOA.
Where do you, I am not, oh, okay, there's one by Bon Jovi, which is not the same song.
Wow.
No.
I feel like this duet has just turned into me singing.
Hasn't it? All right. Yeah. I'll be there for, wait, no, I skipped it, didn't I?
Yeah, because there's the whole thing about being stuck in second
it's
gear.
It's like you're always stuck in second gear. When it hasn't been your day, your week, your month, or even your year,
but I'll be there for you.
When the rain starts to pour. Bye. Sorry, guys. Bye. That was a terrible way to leave. And we just lost everyone.
Somebody's poisoned the water hole.
There's a snake in my boot.
It puts the lotion on its skin. That's another poison as well.